Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, inside lacrosse analyst, my old friend, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, we've got lots to talk about, so let's get it! Dixie, another exciting week of college lacrosse is at our fingertips, starting with games tonight on Friday afternoon. But let's recap a little bit of the last week, and we'll do it through the lens of the Inside Lacrosse Top 20. We have a new top team in the poll. Maryland jumped ahead of Virginia following a very impressive win over the Loyola Greyhounds, which you were on hand to call that game. Other things in the top 20, Jacksonville, big win over Duke. And then they followed that up with a really solid win, 21-12 for Mercer, proving that it wasn't a fluke and that they can handle some success. What are your thoughts on the top 20 this week?
Yeah, so first things first, happy belated Valentine's Day. I hope Miss Flynn treated you well.
Right back at you, man. Yes.
You always are. Good to go, right? Good to go. Yeah. Okay, first things first, Maryland new number one. It's so early, but I think when you look at Maryland and Virginia, so I think the prevailing thought going into the weekend was it's Maryland, Virginia, Duke, and then there's everyone else. I wasn't sold on Duke, and I know hindsight's 2020, but I was ready to tweet. Of course, like most people, I thought they were going to be victorious over Jacksonville, and it was going to be, their first four victories of the year were against teams that were combined 0-7. Top 10, five teams, sure, but ready to say that they're a shoe-in for championship weekend, I'm not so sure. Maryland and Virginia, a little bit different with what they return, how they did in the first week of the season. But I think that Maryland's two substantial wins over NCAA tournament teams from a year ago and their victory over High Point comparative to Virginia, really needing the whole game to put away the Panthers. I think that's what did it for me to put Maryland number one this week over Virginia. And I'm sure a lot of the other voters may have had a similar mindset. Jacksonville, the Dolphins, congratulations. They proved me wrong, beating Duke on Sunday. And what's most impressive, there's two things with that, Dan. I know we talked about it last week, the Hopkins faithful, they were ready to jump off of the East University apartment buildings after they only beat the Dolphins by 3 goals in their home opener. And the big question was, wow, is Jacksonville that good that they can play Hopkins to a 3-goal game? I think it kind of speaks to the arrogance of the Hopkins fan base a little bit. It was a fair question. And I think by them beating Duke, it's like, yeah, Jacksonville is a very good team. And they followed it up with a win over Mercer. Midweek this week. And we always talk about these programs that can score these upsets. How do they handle the success? Can they parlay it into the next game? The Dolphins did. And hats off to John Galloway and his ball club.
Welcome to the top 20 in the Inside Lacrosse poll, Jacksonville. Though you're ranked 15th and Hopkins is 16th. I'm not sure why that is. You just mentioned Hopkins beat Jacksonville by 3 goals just the week before. But it will be settled. It is only February, Dixie, and these polls don't really matter now. It matters where you are at the end. Dixie, this
and
is
I sort couldn't, of... I couldn't agree more. I could not – I'm sorry to jump in, but I could not agree more. I mean, it's so early, and, 10 years ago we've been like, oh, my God, Duke lost to Jacksonville in February. They're done. What's wrong with Danowski? What's wrong with the team? And, it's no big thing.
Dixie, this is sort of like a special episode of the D-Fly and Dixie podcast. It's the Welcome Back Ivy League episode. We'll be seeing them on the field for the first time in a long time, 2 years, it seems even longer than that for the players and the families and the coaches and the fans of these teams. And we have an interview coming up in this episode with Andy Shea, head coach at Yale. You talk to him this week. And we'll get his thoughts on the upcoming season and his team. But can you, let's start with just like a little Ivy League preview. There's three teams ranked in the top 22 other teams getting receiving votes in the IL top 20 poll. Yale's number 7, Penn's 11, 17 is Cornell, Brown and Princeton receiving votes. Give me a little rundown on the Ivy League.
Your guess is as good as mine. You mentioned 2 years of not playing lacrosse. That's substantial. That is very substantial. And as we'll hear from Coach Shea in a little bit, a lot of those kids, particularly at Yale, but I know at Princeton, I know at Harvard, a lot of these kids weren't even on campus last year. So everything was very, long distance in terms of the communication and oversight. But, you know, Yale is the team that won a national title in 2018, national runners up in 2019, Matt Brandau, Chris Fake. There's some holdovers for that team that have the Eli fan base really excited. Penn is a team that everybody has on that upward trajectory. And I think they finally really, met expectations. What was it, 2019, where they played that high scoring thriller against Yale. Sam Hanley is back from injury, and from all reports, he looks like the next big thing in college lacrosse, particularly at the midfield position. Then you talked about Cornell, new coach Connor Busick, a really young guy, but a very energetic staff. And the Big Red, how will they fare post Peter Milliman in that era? Brown, Mike Daly and his coaching staff, got to know them a little bit better over the fall. Just such an impressive bunch and such a tight-knit team. So that's a Bears team, I think, that is kind of laying in wait, no pun intended, to maybe surprise some people in 2022. Princeton, the Mike G watch has officially begun. See if your nephew between the pipes can get some time. But, that's a team that was rolling as good as anyone when the season was halted back in 2020. George Bond is an excellent defender who's back. Obviously, they lose Michael Sowers, who played last year for Duke. But, how does Princeton adjust to the post-Sowers era? And then what do we got? How many teams is that? Dartmouth, the Big Green. And, Coach Callahan, I know they're very aggressive with their recruiting and, some upgrades to their program. And I think the most refreshing thing about Dartmouth is I think that they know who they are and they know what they're up against and they're trying to build. They're just trying to build. And how could we forget? We forgot about the Crimson.
Jerry Bird. You thought we were going to leave you out. We did this on purpose. Joke's on you, Big Red.
But, Jerry Byrne inherits a team that, or not inherits, but, he was there in 2020 and then they got shut down. And they've got a really, really dynamic playmaker in Sam King. He's a terrific one, somebody to really keep watch on. But a lot of young guys going to be playing for Harvard. And I think they're going to take their lumps as well, but they'll battle and they'll improve. And, I think the theme though, collectively, is these guys have to be tickled pink that they are allowed to come back and play. And I use the word allowed because they were denied last year, the opportunity to compete on a whole full scale level. So it's good to have the Ivies back.
Let's bring in Coach Andy Shea. You had a chance to sit down with this week, talk about the upcoming season and all the things that his players have been through and his program over the last 2 years.
We're pleased to be joined this week on the D-Flying Dixie podcast by the head coach at Yale University, Andy Shea. Coach, great to see you. Great to talk with you. Thanks for spending a couple minutes with us.
Great seeing you, buddy.
Ivy League. Lacrosse, Yale lacrosse, back after almost 2 years. Broad question, but how does it feel?
It feels incredible. I mean, it just being around the guys and practicing is a big part of experience. So people have said, getting a lot of text messages from people like yourself and just saying, hey, the game's coming, and what a great experience that's going to be. And it is. It's going to be awesome. But honestly, just being around the team and practicing has been almost as important as the games, I think.
That importance of being around the team, being around the program. You didn't have that in 2021. What were some of the challenges that you and your staff faced with kids that some may have remained on campus, others were not on campus? What were some of the challenges of keeping the guys together and keeping your focus?
Yeah, well, we only had two guys on campus. So, you know, we got a lot of individual time with them and coached them as much as we could. The rest of the guys were either home or remote. Some entire classes went to another part of the world together and worked out, trained and all that. So right when the pandemic started, we started Zooming with the guys and kind of keeping them focused. Then we realized it was probably more detrimental than continuing to do that. People got zoomed out. But as we got closer to, you know, coming back, we realized that there was some things that we had to do for our growth as a team to kind of get those guys kind of acclimated to what we do. And, you know, we came up with some creative ideas to get the guys who had never been part of our program to experience what the older guys had done. So, you know, I think our older players, our seniors and juniors did a great job of getting guys up to speed and making sure they understood what was expected, you know, of them when they got here. And, you know, from the practices, it's been great. Every guy's been right there, I would say, lockstep with what we do. And, you know, in the scrimmages, it's looked a little bit different than what we're used to in terms of decision-making and all that. So, but, you know, games will arrive here and we'll see when the lights come on for real, how good a job we did.
It's always interesting to ask the question, you know, creative is a word that a lot of coaches used, particularly in the Ivy League during this time. What were some of the creative things that you guys came up with to keep the guys engaged and keep them on the same page with what you expect?
When it first started, we had our young guys, we call it Coach Cameo. We had them create a presentation about certain things that we do. So it could be a clear, it could be, you know, our defense, it could be our offense, could be a drill that we do. And they had a couple weeks to ask coaches and older players how these things work. And then they had to give a presentation. So we had all of our freshmen giving presentations on what we do as well as they could. Some were great. Some were really not well done. And it was kind of a gong show response from the older guys when the kids screwed stuff up. So, and then the other thing we did, which I think helped a fair amount, is our guys watched old games where we had done well and maybe had come back from down a few goals. And then they Zoomed with alums that were on those teams that were part of those games and asked them questions about what happened, how, you know, how they felt like the game turned for them and what they did, you know, in order to make that happen. So it's something we kind of pride ourselves on and how we play. And I, you know, my fear is that, you know, that gets lost. You know, I think when you see it as you're standing on the sidelines, when you're a younger player and then it's now your turn, you can kind of call back to that. So I wanted them to get a sense for what it was like as best we could through our alums. And we went back, you know, 10 years and we had guys, it was really cool because guys that have been out for 10 or 12 years were saying things like, you know, I don't know if you guys still use this call, or I don't know if you guys still say this. And every single call was what we still use. So it was pretty cool, I thought.
Sounds neat. And I love the gong show reference for some of our listeners who may be of a younger vintage. Do yourself a favor, go on YouTube.
Well, we'll hit 20% of the population, I'm sure. But
so. Chuck Barris, an American icon. Big question for you, Coach. It's been a while since we've seen Handsome Dan. What is he up to and how is he doing?
Handsome Dan was retired. He's living down in Brooklyn. His handler is working for the Brooklyn Nets. So we have a new Handsome Dan. His name is, what is his name? It's Kingman, after Kingman Brewster, former president. So Handsome Dan, from what I understand, is going to try and come to the game on Saturday against Villanova. And the new Handsome Dan is the, I think, nephew, same breeder, same breed of dog, very cute dog. But Walter, the the erstwhile Hanson Dan is retired. I had 300 alums on a call shortly in the pandemic, and he had you know, quote unquote retired, and Kevin DiCepolo, whose handler, was down, you know, heading down to Brooklyn to work for the Nets. And I said the dog had to be destroyed, and the whole place gasped. And I was just joking. I was joking, of course, but it didn't go over well.
Handsome Dan, an icon. I can imagine the reaction of a you know, yes. His demise would not be met with excitement.
No, morale's low, and probably shouldn't have done it. But read the room, I guess, next time.
You know, a couple in our first few questions here, Coach. You've mentioned your alums, that alumni base of Yale lacrosse. How would you best describe it, and how has it evolved during your tenure as head coach, including the national championship season of 2018?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, Mark, this is, I can't tell you how many times, you know, I'm just humbled and amazed at the support that we have from them, and not just monetary support. And obviously it's been significant, but you know, when this whole thing started, we had guys calling around the clock saying, if guys want to take a year off, let me know, they have a job here. And, you know, it, if I had a guy that was saying I wanted to take a year, it took me maybe 5 minutes to get him situated with a job for that, you know, for this year, which is incredible. These guys have been unbelievably supportive my entire time through here, you know, and we had a little bit of, we had some time getting it going my first couple of years where we were, you know, 6-8, 7-5, 6-8, whatever. And then, you know, a couple years that we, you know, weren't too happy about. I never heard a word from any of them other than support, you know, just because I think they realize how hard it is to win here. And, you know, they just through the whole time was like, just stick with it. And, you know, we like you being our coach, and, you know, I, of course, like being here. So when we started to win more, and now we're, you know, 10 or 11 years after we won our first league championship, which meant a lot to those guys, you know, their support when it wasn't that great, it's not lost. I've never forgotten, and I never will forget it. So I think people wonder why, what's keeping me at Yale? Why am I loyal to Yale? And it's honestly, it's to those guys and to the university as well, and my kids, but they've always supported me. And, you know, they've done legendary things with our program in terms of endowing the program. Our facilities now are absolutely off the charts, and I don't have to really twist anyone's arm to get these things done. I ask, you know, one or two guys, hey, what do you think about this? Do you think this is possible? And it happens, you know, and it's just been an incredible experience with them.
Facilities. You guys have a new one, and it's pretty impressive. For folks who haven't been able to see it, hear about it, how would you characterize your new facility at Yale?
I mean, to my opinion, it's the most impressive building in our game right now. You know, there's nothing that we don't have right now that we, you know, we don't really need anything. Our guys have a state-of-the-art locker room. The weight room is absolutely unbelievable. We have offices on the field, which are, we have offices that are in the central part of campus as well. These are more kind of satellite offices. But, you know, they have a team center, all of that. They put in new stands on the far side. They fixed the windows of Cox Cage, which, you know, some people found charming. Some people found confusing that building looked like it was falling apart, but the entire thing just sparkles now. The Jumbotron, the Reese Stadium to begin with, and the field itself, it's just, I think it's the best facility in the country. And excited to have fans back there this Saturday.
Going from what things were like when you got to Yale and you know, kind of a, for lack of a better term, you know, like a Spartan kind of existence to having this new facility now. Recruiting as well, you know, Yale is top of mind to a lot of folks. Maybe it wouldn't have been from a lacrosse standpoint, you know, years ago. How do you adjust to that as the head coach of the program? And how does your staff adjust to, you know, the ascension of Yale lacrosse?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's something that it's, you know, I'm worried that we're, you know, with this shiny new building, we're not going to get the guys that, you know, have put us in this position in the first place. You know, I think that the senior class that won the national championship only had two guys ranked in the top 100. And that's not something that, you know, we don't necessarily want. We want, obviously want talented players, but we want guys that don't care about the shiny object. And we probably go overboard to say, hey, this is not, it's, you know, this is going to be really hard. And, you know, you're explaining this to this guy, you know, meanwhile, there's a shadow being cast by this enormous Death Star of a building on the end of your field. So I think for us, definitely the guys on the team, we've appealed to them to say, look, this is, you know, the guys that had nothing gave you this, and they didn't give it to you to put your feet up and not work that hard. So we want to be cognizant of that. And we want to make sure that the guys that we get in here will uphold those values in order to enjoy this type of luxury. So it's not like if you win a lot of games and a program has the means, they're going to do that. They're going to build newer, nicer facilities and all that. We don't want that to be the wind in the sails for our recruiting at all. It's just not, I mean, you know, you've been through this, you know, you and I have talked about this.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's hard to not talk about it and see these things, but we're trying every step of the way.
Sure. Along the way in your coaching journey, who have been your mentors? Who have been people that you look up to, still look up to, and are in communication with?
You know, I think the two guys that I have been under Division I level, Bob Schillinglaw, you know, gave me a shot as, you know, as a guy who he didn't know from a junior college, coaching in junior college, and was, you know, an incredible mentor in so many different ways. And then of course, Greg Cannella at UMass, you know, both of them, I feel like I'm a product of two very different types of coaches, two of which I have an incredible amount of respect for. But I think that my path is unique in that, you know, like I said, they are two very different types of coaches. So I've taken something from both of them. I'm not like either of them. I'm a byproduct of both of them. So I think that I don't know where I would be or what I would be, you know, what I would be about if I didn't work under those guys. I can't thank them enough. And, you know, like I said, those two couldn't be further apart in how they do things. It's kind of amazing, but I can see the value in everything that each of them has done. And, you know, like I said, there's every day, you know, I go to work, I can think of things that I've pulled from working with Shills and things I've pulled from working with Greg and you know, just value their, you know, mentorship and support. So still here, obviously Greg and I talk a lot. You know, we play obviously. So, you know, in season when we get to play, but probably don't talk as much, but you know, a lot over the course of the year. And just got a text from Shills the other day. He's enjoying retirement and he's a grandfather now again. So, which is hard to believe, but you know, still hear from both of them a lot.
Yeah. Hard to believe, you and me both. We're not getting any younger, right?
Exactly.
Shifting to the lacrosse piece, the Ivy League again, it'll be almost 2 years since competition. How do you handicap the Ivy League? You know, Yale included, obviously, but you know, coming back after such a long competitive layoff.
Yeah, I mean, I can only look at, I know who these kids are, the other rosters. It's not like playing against them. I don't, you know them a little bit better, but you recruited against them too. So you know who all these kids are as well, even if they're new. I do wonder if they are dealing with the same things that we are dealing with. But, you know, you're a little more attentive to scrimmage scores. You know what I mean? You research that as much as possible, as much as you can to find out, you know, how those guys are doing. And, you know, so I think that I'm in it. I'm one of the coaches. I'm the oldest or longest tenure, not oldest, but longest tenured Ivy League coach by a mile. And I have no idea what I think is going to happen this year. I have no idea. And most of that is honestly coming from our first few practices and scrimmages. I'm like, okay, this feels a little different. We gotta fix this. Things that have been fixed by, I guess, maturity. We're still working on. So I'm hoping that we can get up to what everyone expects our speed to be as soon as we can, but I don't know when that's going to be.
Guess that's kind of the beauty of it and part of the scary aspect of things.
I'm way more scared than enamored by it. I'll tell you right now.
Your 2022 Bulldog team, who's providing leadership? Who are the anchors of this year's squad?
I mean, our senior class that is now would be fifth year seniors of Brian Tevlin, Christian Kropp, Jack Starr, Luke Eschbach, Chris Fake, and Will Cabrera to a certain extent, although he has another year. They're doing the best job they can, given our what appears to be a fair amount of youth, a lot more youth than we thought, let's put it that way. So they understand everything that we expect. I think that they're putting a fair amount of pressure on themselves, given the fact that this is, the first Yale lacrosse game in 2 years or whatever, year and a half. So, or 2 years, I should say, season and a half. But I think that they understand that it's going to come with some patience and, continued hard work. And they're trying to hone their leadership skills as well. So, really, I would say those seniors and our captain, Brian Tevlin, they've been impressive from the moment they had to leave campus till to now. They've been incredibly impressive.
Just got two more for you, Coach, a little bit off the beaten path. Being up in New Haven, many see that as the pizza capital of the world. What's the go-to in the Shea household?
Well, my kids vacillate. I think Modern is probably the best. And I think Sally's is a little bit, they're all phenomenal. Bar Sally's, Pepe's and Modern. I think Modern's the best. There is a sneaky West Haven place. If you're ever in the area and you don't want to wait in the lines that go down the street, it's called Zoo Parties. I think that's the best overall. So, but that's a little bit to talk about off the beaten path. That's a little out of the way to go get it. If you're headed south, it's maybe worth it, but that's the best one that nobody really knows about.
You heard it here first, folks. Zoo Parties in New Haven. Give it a whirl.
West Haven.
Sorry. I get my havens mixed up being a Southern guy.
Fair.
So pandemic time or normal time, do you consider yourself, if either, more of a music person or a, television streaming kind of person?
If I had to pick, I guess television streaming.
So what are the Shays, what is Andy Shea watching right now?
Right now, I just finished Yellowstone. That's probably one of my favorite shows of all time.
It's phenomenal. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
It's pretty incredible. I think it's a little it's over the top, but it's some of the best TV I've seen in forever. I don't really watch a lot of dramas. Big Arrested Development fan. I don't know if you ever watched that show, obviously, but
sure. Shows
like that crack me up. So,
along the lines of Arrested Development, we just finished Ozark. The first part of season 4. The second part is coming later this year. But Jason Bateman, the Marty Bird character, he's incredible. Impressive. Yeah,
we just started season 4, so
it's good. It's good. You'll enjoy it.
With lacrosse season, it's hard to get into TV.
Of course, I can imagine. Yeah, that might be a late night steal if you have like a 45 minutes or an hour here or there. A quick and dirty one you could watch, Cobra Kai. I highly recommend Cobra Kai.
I started that the first, I think I'd watched the first few of the first season. Didn't quite grab me, but maybe this summer I'll give it another chance.
Yeah, you want to talk about over the top and ridiculous too, but highly entertaining. Highly entertaining.
Yeah. I get it.
Excellent. Coach, can't thank you enough for spending a few minutes with us here on the Flying Dixie podcast. Thank you so much for your time. Good luck this weekend against Villanova. Thanks, brother. And in the rest of the 22 season.
Appreciate it.
Dixie, another awesome solo interview.
Getting the hang of it.
Yeah, I'm impressed. Thank you.
I don't have the gumption though when we have some of those technical difficulties to ask a coach to repeat. Hey, you know your connection stinks. Can you repeat that answer? I'll get better at that. But
yeah, just throw it out there. We'll edit that in post.
We'll edit that in post.
The fly will take care of that. Don't worry.
We'll do it live.
Just let's say it again. Let's rewind. Say that one again, so we get a clear. No, it's great. I appreciate you doing that, and I hope to join you on some of these. But you're picking up the slack for me, and much appreciated.
Go back, what, 2 or 3 years? I was like, well, first of all, you didn't want to do anything unless I was sitting right next to you.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have this Zoom thing worked out where we could, like, look at each other and talk and have a quality audio recording.
Right.
But I wanted to always do it in person.
And back then, there was no way I would have been open to conducting the interview myself with the equipment that you were using. So I guess what I'm trying to say is we both come a long way.
We have come a long way, and it's so much easier to do these interviews. I remember some of the times I'd be calling a player or a coach, and they're on a cell phone, and they're in the middle. You know, I remember one particular one, it's T.D. Erland, and he was in their indoor facility at Yale, and you just couldn't hear him, and it was right after practice, and now you can look at someone, and you can get a quality connection, and it's much improved. So now we have no excuse for any type of audio or technical difficulties. So we may be setting ourselves up for egg on our face. But again, I appreciate that. It was a great interview. And they're going to get on the field this Saturday. And I'm sure they're extremely excited. And there are an incredible amount of games. Dix, there are 31 games on Saturday. A lot of teams in action. There are 5 top 20 matchups on Saturday alone. 6 on the weekend. 6 top 20 matchups. It's practically like the NCAA tournament. Let's get to the games. Number 12, Denver, is 2-0. They will travel to Tobacco Road to take on the number 8, Duke Blue Devils, 3-1 now. That game is at noon, and it's available for your consumption on the ACC Network Extra streaming channel.
Yeah, for whatever reason, my ACC Network on the ESPN app on my television went kaput this weekend, but it still worked on my iPad. I called their help, and very nice gentleman that I spoke with, but his only recommendation was to sign out of the app and go back in, and that didn't work. He had no other recommendations for me. So he said somebody would be emailing me within an hour or two, and I'm still waiting for that email. So
I hope you didn't hold your breath. That's what I like, sir. All I can offer is, did you try turning it off and turning it back on? You're like, seriously? That's your help desk answer for me?
Like I said, the guy couldn't have been nicer. And yeah. I still was able to watch on my iPad. So it wasn't a complete, loss, but, whatever. Technology.
Do you have Apple TV?
We don't. I'm cheap, man. I got like the 7-day free trial, and then we binge watched Ted Lasso and then got rid of it.
No. But you have an Apple TV box. You have the
I don't think so. No.
You don't have the little black Apple TV box?
No, we're Verizon.
Well, yeah, I have Verizon, but I switched to my Apple TV, which is like a streaming. It's like, do you run it through your game console or something? Like some people do it through like a PlayStation or Xbox.
No, well, we got Apple TV. We have a smart TV, so it was right off the TV.
Oh, so you need the little Apple TV device. It costs like $100, right? And you can screen share your iPad. You just swipe up and screen share, and you mirror your device right on your TV.
I can do that off of my phone, but I found that I could not do it off my iPad.
On your TV.
Was saying onto the TV. Yeah. It was saying that it was capturing, but it was just a blank screen. So
got it. Yeah. That's why you can do stuff like that really easy. And Apple TV is super affordable. And then all of the apps, that's where I stream everything from my Apple TV. So Netflix, all that stuff is Disney Plus is through my Apple TV.
See, I got way ahead of myself, patting myself on the back for being more technologically advanced.
Baby steps, man. Baby steps.
That's
true. Let's talk about Denver and Duke.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a Denver team. Jack Hanna, to me, is the most overlooked best player in the country. I mean, he's just a phenomenal midfielder. And we just don't seem to really talk about him very much. So I think he's terrific. Alex Simmons is a great shooter. They got Stahakis at the faceoff dot. I mean, this, you know, Denver, what, one goal win over Utah, and then they won last week. Was it Air Force? Okay. Yeah, tight game with the Air Force, but you know, they're coming east to play a Duke team that, you know, you like to say that Duke's going to be really mad and really ready to get after it. But it's always hard to say that about a John Donowski team just because he's so calm. And he is, you know, he's such a relaxing presence. But I'm sure, you know, and that's not an insult by any stretch of the imagination. But it's like, you know, it's like, how can you get mad when you have your yoga teacher, you know, giving you the pregame pep talk before you run out and try to tear into somebody? So it'll be a great game. You know, it's a game. Can Duke rebound and can Denver make a statement coming east and knocking off the Blue Devils?
Let's talk about our first game featuring an Ivy League participant. Number three, Georgetown, looked very good from the second quarter on against Hopkins last week. They're 1-0 playing at number 11, Penn. That game is at noon on ESPN Plus. And if you're in the Philadelphia area, you can see it on NBC Sports Philadelphia Plus.
First game for the Quakers. What do they have? Like, I think a lot of lacrosse fans are using this as a barometer for each team. High hopes for Penn. Where are they ranked in the IO?
They're ranked number 11.
11. Okay. And you got Georgetown, who was, what, 4 or 5, and everybody's saying, oh, are the Hoyas for real? I mean, they fell behind first game two of the season to Hopkins and then quickly got things going and dominated for, what, 2.5 quarters. Talked to some people who were at the game. The biggest takeaway was Owen McElroy, their goalie. I mean, we've talked about their defense, and we've talked about Owen quite a bit, but they were like, that guy is next level good. I'm like, well, you know, he is a first-team All-American. But he apparently was just ridiculous. I did not get to see the game. I have watched a little bit of film as I prepare to, I'll be on the broadcast team for this weekend, the Loyola Hopkins game at Homewood Field. This will be a terrific game, a barometer game. And, you know, the Quakers, I think the Quakers are going to experience what a lot of teams experience. They might be a little rusty or in a lull, playing against a team that has already had that game speed, real live action experience. But should be a fun one up on the main line.
Yeah.
Is that considered main line? Is UPenn considered main line or no?
It is not.
My bad.
No, that'll be University City. All right, Dix, you had a chance to talk to Andy Shea, the head coach at Yale. His number 7 Yale Bulldogs will play number 20 Villanova, who had a great win last week. That game's at noon and fans can watch that on ESPN Plus.
Again, excited to see Yale, as a lot of people are. How will they look? Long layoff, first game of the season against a Villanova team that fought off Penn State this past weekend in a really exciting game up at Panzer Stadium. You know, Villanova, they're a team that they have a number of transfers. They do. They have some guys that are stepping in. I mean, Brett Baskin scored the first goal of the season. He's a graduate transfer from Johns Hopkins. And they're a team that just plays really loose. They're a very fun team to watch. Luke Keating, the transfer from Franklin and Marshall, another transfer, had 2 goals. But Patrick Daly was the big hero of the day. 6 goals, you know, a half dozen for Patrick Daly in the win before Villanova. So this will be a real stiff test for the Bulldogs. And I think with that Georgetown Penn game, this one's getting, you know, kind of mixed or lost in the wash, if you will, the Big East versus the Ivies. But this will be a good one. Keep your eye on this one.
Yes, there's one top 10 matchup on Saturday. And we've mentioned some schools with incredible lacrosse traditions and have been regular entries in the top 10. But this game, the one top 10 game of the weekend, number 6 Rutgers, 3-0, will host the number 10 Army West Point Black Knights of the Hudson, 1 o'clock on Big Ten Plus.
This one is always wild. And I feel like it's either a close game or Army blows Rutgers out. What will it be this year? As you mentioned, the Scarlet Knights 3-0, as usual, kind of the Rodney Dangerfield of college lacrosse, not getting a ton of respect. Yeah, they're 3-0, but Marist had them on the ropes before they scored some goals. They went out on, I think it was on Saturday, and just whitewashed St. John's 23-6. But you know, they've been impressive with Bartolo. The transfer from Penn has been really good. I mean, I just think he's a really, really good player. And this is an Army team that slugged it out with UMass. That was a fun game. I saw some of the highlights from that Army UMass game. And that was just really, really fun. And, you know, Army has a lot of high hopes this year. So this will be a stiff test for both of these ball clubs. And it's oftentimes it can be indicative of how the season is going, but not all the time, or how the season will progress for each.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that Rutgers was 3-0 and they had played 3 games. Somehow that snuck under my radar.
Again, you're not paying attention to the Scarlet Knights.
The 3 games. I was like, wow, I'm not surprised they're undefeated. I was more surprised that they had already played 2 games. We're going to skip over. I usually do this chronologically, but we're going to go to the 3 o'clock game that's fans can watch on the ACC network on broadcast TV. This is Ohio State is 2-0. Playing at number 5, North Carolina, who's also 2-0. That game's at 3 o'clock.
And Carolina, they had a dogfight on their hands this past week with Richmond. That was a really, really fun game to watch. And you got to be impressed with the face-off work that Carolina is getting done right now. And they'll have their hands full against Justin Inacio from Ohio State. I feel like right now, Carolina's just a little more battle-tested. You know, Ohio State, they play those early games inside of Woody Hayes, that cozy indoor facility. They did dominate, Detroit Mercy and Cleveland State, I think, are their 2 wins. Yes. This obviously is you know, they're going on the road, and it's a step up in competition. So, you know, how will the Buckeyes respond? Jack Myers is a guy that leads that attack. He's the offensive leader for Ohio State. Carolina last week started 3 brand new defensemen. They not only did they graduate a bunch of guys, but they had guys hurt. So they had 3, you know, one of which was Paul Barton, freshman. So, you know, that defense, I think, or that North Carolina team to go 2-0, you know, with the lineup that they had, that's a real credit, good start for the Heels. And this is always a fun game. You know, these two teams always scrimmage in the Michael the Michael Bresci scholarship game, the thumbs up. So this will be really fun to watch him play in the regular season.
And the last game I want to talk about for Saturday, the game that I'm most interested in, I'll certainly be watching, and you'll be watching because you're calling this game. Number 14, Loyola, travels down to Charles Street to face the number 16 Blue Jays, who are 2-1. Game's at 2 o'clock, and it's streaming on ESPN.
Yeah, I think it's streaming live, and then it'll be tape delayed on ESPNU later. Yeah, so the Charles Street rivalry renewed, always fun. Loyola, you know, they struggled, to say the least, against Maryland. And you know, we're talking about, you know, the big question I've been getting this week is Maryland that good? Is Loyola that bad? And I'm like, you know, the answer is somewhere in the middle. I think the answer is always somewhere in the middle. And you know, a Loyola team that I compare this game to the 1994 home opener that we had at Hopkins. We got blitzed by Princeton 20-8. So the same identical score that Maryland beat Loyola by last week. And as the season progressed, we got better and we played Princeton in the quarterfinals at Princeton, lost in overtime, never should have lost that game. Still not over the ticky-tack BS call against Werner Kruger late when we were up by one. It was some BS old call that they that Princeton got, and they scored the the game tying goal, and then that was just a weird 6-7 minutes of like lacrosse, between the end of regulation and overtime when we lost to Princeton. But the moral of the story is it's the first game of the year. There's a lot of ground to be covered, a lot of improvement to be made. So if you're a Loyola fan, don't go climbing up, Ridley's rooftop and think about, what the Hopkins fans were thinking about after the Jacksonville game, climbing on top of the East University Parkway apartments. So, and then Johns Hopkins, they were strong early against Georgetown and just didn't shoot very well the rest of the way out. We mentioned Owen McElroy being a huge presence in net for Georgetown, but we're skipping right over their nice win on Friday night over Towson, 18-12. So I think Hopkins is a very good passing team. I feel like they pass the ball very, very well. I don't think they really have a ton of guys that are going to beat you off the dribble, but they pass the ball incredibly well. Still question marks in the goal, but this is always a great game, and it'll be fun on Saturday.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised on Friday. I think I texted you like before the game started, right when I feel like that Hopkins line of Grimes, Epstein, and DeSimone should be good for like 8 to 10 goals a game. And I think they scored 10 goals. They combined for 10 goals. And I don't know if they can do that against the top 10 teams every time, but I feel like there should be like an average of that over the course of the season. And it was nice to see them do that against Towson and get Epstein especially going. And he started the game against Georgetown well as well. So I'm excited to see this game and see, obviously this game is, I don't know what the Dixon household is going to do. You're calling this game too, which will at least keep you very neutral in this. But man, Loyola, Hopkins, I wonder, who is Erica Dixon rooting for in this game?
Come on. Really? You have to ask that question of a mother? I mean, she might be a Hopkins grad, but she's a mom.
So. Is she going to have one of those jerseys that has like Loyola on one side with like your number on one and like,
I can tell you unequivocally, my wife will be wearing green on Saturday.
Absolutely. No, I don't blame her. That's cool. My 6-year-old son, we watched football on, we're really big Ravens fans, and he will do this thing. He's like, what if I had to play for the Steelers, what would you do? And I'm like, the Steelers become our favorite team.
Yeah,
for whatever team you play for, Bennett. And he's like, well, what if I played for, we don't like the Cowboys. And he's like, what if I played for the Cowboys? I'd be like, I'd be really excited if you played for the Cowboys someday. We would root for the Cowboys. That would be our favorite team. He's like, really? What if we played the Ravens? I'm like, we'd root for the Cowboys. It'd be okay. But I love how he already pictures himself starting for multiple teams in the NFL. I love how he's already doing that.
So yeah, he's going to the main rival. He wants to play in the Steel City, which is gross.
But it really captivates him and troubles him. Like, he's 5 years old and he's sitting there saying,
it's cool to see. Yeah.
What if, would you still love me if I played for the Steelers? Like, that would be great. That would be fantastic. He's really weighs on it. Like what, when that happens, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
So
as long as you get dad, mom and dad tickets, we're fine. Don't worry about it. Well, you bring up a couple good things. So immediately as I'm thinking through this conversation, there's two things that pop into my mind. One is the Doniger family. Remember, Jason Doniger played for Princeton and Adam played for Hopkins, and their father used to have that split sweatshirt.
Abby Doniger.
Was it Abby? Was that the gentleman's name?
Okay. Yeah.
He had the split sweatshirt. One side was Hopkins, one side was Princeton. So it can be done. We just witnessed it last week at Loyola versus Maryland. The Higgins brothers not only were on separate teams, but they matched up a couple times in the game. Jake is a short stick D middie for Maryland. Seth as an offensive middie for Loyola. But to your point about like who is my wife rooting for, before I had children, you know, when I was doing Hopkins games on the radio and then subsequently television, the Bolins, you know, Kevin Boland was playing for Hopkins, and Kevin Boland Sr. was a Maryland graduate and a All-American midfielder. And like, I used to look at Mr. Boland, and of course, of all rivalries, like I'd be like, how can you cheer for Hopkins if you're Mr. Boland? And, you know, now that I'm a dad, it's not hard. I mean, you root for your children. You're in your children's corner, but more than anything.
Another family I can think of are the Schwartzmans. So I think, you know, Jesse's brother Andrew played at Maryland. Yeah. And Jesse was a goalie at Hopkins. Yeah.
But Kevin Boland Sr. didn't. As a matter of fact, Kevin's younger brother Chris then played for Hopkins.
Yeah, great player too.
Kevin. So I'm just saying, like, you know, at least the Schwartzmans, you got one on each team. So your rooting interest is kind of justified. But
yeah,
it's interesting. It really is. And it's fun. It's fun.
It'll be fun. And that's the goal. It's a game. It's early in the season. It's fun. And I can't wait. That should be now that NFL football is off the table for sports fans.
Officially done.
It is lacrosse and I guess some hoops. But we're really getting into the meat of the lacrosse season. And there's a great bunch of games on Saturday. They're available. Again, there's five of them featuring top 20 matchups. Make sure you plan your day around those between noon and, say, 4 or 5 o'clock. You should be making plans to be in front of your television set. Okay, Dix, there's one huge game on Sunday. Number one, Maryland, travels up to the Dome to play the number 9, Syracuse Orange, who looked great in their season opener against Holy Cross. That game is at noon. It'll be available streaming on ACC Network Extra.
Great game. And it's going to be a fun day. We had Gary Gate on last week. He was talking about Katie Rowan, a Syracuse women's lacrosse player, having her jersey retired. Gary Gate is having his retired. And then Roy Simmons is getting into the Syracuse, like, Ring of Honor or whatever. So it's a big day for the Orange. You know, again, Maryland rolling heavy, really dominating High Point, dominating Loyola. I mean, daggone, the Syracuse, you know, 28-5 over Holy Cross. You know, talking to some coaches, especially coaches that saw Syracuse in the fall, they were kind of like, you know, we'd be surprised if Syracuse could win like a game or two in the spring with the way they looked in the fall. And now, you know, they're got a big chip on their shoulder, new coaching staff. Gary alluded to it last week in our conversation. Nobody thinks we're any good. You know, we're ranked low if we're ranked at all. And, you know, this is a Maryland team that always seems to play very, very well in the beginning of the season. Not that they don't do well, you know, obviously making it to championship weekend more times than not, but the beginning of the season, they're just so dialed in and so efficient. So this is a huge test for Syracuse. And I think this is more of a barometer game for the Cuse than it is for the Terps. But still, nonetheless, it'll be good to see these guys tangle in the Dome.
So you end your weekend on Sunday with another great game. Like I said before, get in front, but plan your weekend around these games and make sure you get your fill. All right, Dix, it's time for the give and go segment. This week, we're doing the one that's a little more traditional. I was pouring some cereal for my kids the other day. I think it was, they asked for Cocoa Puffs.
I was going to say, I'm a big cereal guy, so you got it.
Well, this is what we're doing. We're ranking cereal. I'm going to give you my favorites. And I'm leaving out like the adult type healthy ones. Think back to your childhood. Think back to your childhood. Sugary, delicious cereals. And I'm going to rank my cereals. I'll give you my top 5. Okay. And it was tough to do. Number 1. And this was easy though. Captain Crunch with Crunch Berries.
Ugh.
Hands down, number 1 favorite cereal. Number 2, Count Chocula. Love the mix of the chocolate and the marshmallows. What, you know, again, some of this is like what's left in the bowl, like that sweet milk that you just drink from the Crunch Berries or the Count Chocula. Switching it up a little bit. Number 3, Fruity Pebbles. Now, I wasn't big on the Cocoa Pebbles, the chocolate version of that, but I love the Fruity Pebbles. Don't know why. Number four, Lucky Charms. And then number five, I had a little, it was tough for me to go between either Cocoa Puffs or Fruit Loops, and I put Cocoa Puffs. Cocoa Puffs is number five. Now, I'll let get yours, and then there's a bunch of other cereals that I liked, but that's my top five.
The most depressing thing is now being 50 years old and trying, keyword trying, to watch what I eat. Cereal has like no nutritional value whatsoever. So it's incredibly disappointing, especially the ones that we're talking about. But I will go number one, Golden Grahams. I love Golden
Grahams. Literally writing that down is like one that I would, you know, I've always felt like that was like one of the healthy ones.
Golden Grahams is awesome because I used to so I get a box of Golden Grahams and then I would go to the Giant and get their Giant brand donuts, the powdered sugar or the cinnamon, and I used to dump the put like a quarter of the donut in and like swish it down to the bottom, and then it became part of the cereal. I did that with Golden Grahams and I did that with Frosted Flakes. So Golden Grahams and Frosted Flakes were my two go-to cereals growing up. Loved them. Loved them, loved them, loved them. Fruity Pebbles and Cocoa Pebbles, both. Awesome. It's like the consistency of them when they're in the milk and in the bowl and you get a clump of them and they're just so soft and like, and even when it would get a little mushy, like it was just so, so good. So good. Cap'n Crunch, no way. It used to cut the roof of my mouth. Garbage.
Oh, that's why I kind of like Fruit Loops down a little bit, because that would Fruit Loops would do that to me.
It was like eating a bag of glass.
Oh man, the Crunch Berries, and like you'd sort out like in your bowl the like, you know, ration the Crunch Berries with the scoops of the Cap'n. Oh, okay.
This one maybe a little bit more toward the adult side. Frosted Mini Wheats have always been awesome. Love Frosted Mini Wheats.
On my like grown up taste
list. And I got to go with you on Count Chocula, Frankenberry, Booberry.
I don't mess around.
I tell you what. So on my wedding day, so this is October 30th of 1999. I was nervous. I just couldn't eat. I don't know what I was doing either. I had to go to the grocery store for something. And they had, it was being around Halloween or the day before Halloween, they had all the Booberry and I felt like I hadn't seen them in years. So of course I buy a box of each, and that's what I ate before my wedding. And it was so gross. that stuff, I don't know if it's decreased in quality or if my tastes have matured, but I mean, all it is basically like, the shape of a bat spray painted like chocolate. When you're in the mood for those little bits of marshmallow, like that is legit.
Yeah,
that is legit. I did like honeycomb.
Yeah, as well. Remember all the commercials?
Come to the honeycomb hideout.
I have those cereal jingles in my head all the time. My kids, so I couldn't. The Booberry and the Frankenberry, just get that out of here. That's trash. The chocolate, Count Chocolate is legit. Lucky Charms with, I had to explain to my kids who Lucky is. And I remember this was about 2 years ago. We're going through YouTube, scouring YouTube to find the Lucky Charms commercials of the little leprechaun, the Trix Bunny, Trix cereal, Cocoa Puffs, Fruit Loops. They get that. One cereal that I have a bag of, I thought my kids would like, and it just sits there, is Cookie Crisp. Or the little chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah, Cookie Crisp.
I got a bag of those. It was on sale, and I got a box of it, and it's still just sitting in my, probably should just throw it away. But yeah, that's, in my kids, like my wife eats Special K with red berries. Special K cereal.
So
my
dehydrated kids fake fruit.
They like, yeah, with the strawberries. They like that. They like the Frosted Mini Wheats. Yeah. I used to, my healthy cereal when I was a kid was Corn Chex.
I remember
not
that,
wheat,
yeah.
Not Wheat Chex, but Corn Chex.
Mine was Frosted Flakes, but I dump like half a jar of sugar on top of it.
On top of Frosted Flakes, or do you mean
like? Or Cheerios. Cheerios was the
other one. Or Wheaties. Remember Wheaties?
I remember Wheaties. I
forget.
You know what's a really underrated one was you remember Golden Crisp? They're like those rice puffs flavored. I forget what the flavor is, but it had a bear on the cover.
Oh yeah,
the cereal box. Golden Crisp was a good one.
That's not what it's called.
It was called Golden Crisp. Yeah.
Okay. Golden Puffs, maybe?
Or Sugar Crisp. One of the
sugar,
two. Golden
sugar, Crisp or Sugar, sugar Crisp. Puffs or Sugar Crisp. I think it was called Sugar Crisp.
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah.
Now that I'm adult, I typically go for like Honey Nut Cheerios or any kind of Cheerios. The peanut butter and chocolate Cheerios are really good. Frosted Cheerios are legit. Fruit Loops were okay back in the day. They weren't my favorite, but they were okay. But really, my go-to cereal as an adult is Honey Bunches of Oats. I love Honey Bunches. I don't know if you ever had Honey Bunches of Oats.
No, that really sounds good. Way too grown up for me. I remember really there was good. This campaign when we were kids. There was a cereal called Grape Nuts.
I remember Grape
and
Nuts,
be, yeah. I think it was like Wilford Brimley or somebody who would be eating a bowl of Grape Nuts. And it was like, what's your, you know, the healthy thing your grandfather's supposed to eat? And it was literally like dirt. It tasted like dirt.
Yeah.
Like scraps of walnut shells thrown in a bowl. You're supposed to, I don't know what the whole plan there was. I don't eat much cereal.
I don't eat any cereal. It sucks. I love cereal. I don't eat it.
My kids eat it all the time.
It's got so much sugar. I mean, it's got, look at the label, it's like sugar, 14 grams. Then you got to look at the extra sugars. What do you mean extra sugar? Another 15 grams.
Well, we have been lied to all of our lives of what a healthy breakfast is supposed to have, like,
oh, no doubt.
8 ounces of orange juice, which is just pure sugar in the morning.
Yep.
Maybe donuts, cereal, or breads, or little pastries. All of that is terrible, terrible for you to start the day. So I just do a little protein, like a hard-boiled egg or two.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do Sunday night or something. I'll boil a half a dozen eggs and just peel them and save them. Have one every day or two every day, or like a cheese stick and a cup of coffee, and just get a little protein. It gives you keeps you going, gives you a little energy, satiates you until lunchtime, and it that's all you need.
We're a big egg household. I'm not a huge breakfast guy these days. Forever, I can skip breakfast sometimes. You do that like intermittent fasting thing. Breakfast is typically the meal that gets sacrificed. But love breakfast though. I mean, you go to like a diner, and you can do some damage.
What is your favorite? I have a particular menu item that I just love whenever I go to a diner, and I was wondering if you have one. Cream chip beef. Did we talk about this? I feel like we've talked about this once before.
Ass on a shingle.
But I don't get it on the bread. I'll just get like a bowl of it. So I'll get a Western omelet and the home fries and toast and everything. And then I'll say, can you give me cream chip beef? And if you go at a certain time, they're out. They're out by 10:30 or something. And I don't know why the early birds or how they could run out if people are still want it. I don't know. Or how hard it is to make, but they're always out of it.
I used to like chocolate chip banana pancakes when I was, a young adult. Those are nasty. Obviously as I've gotten older, but love an omelet with bacon, mushroom, and Swiss. Great. That's a go-to. Love grits. If anybody ever has grits on the menu, especially cheesy grits. Yeah. Yeah. Sign me up for that.
Wow.
Chicken and waffles also. Chicken and waffles.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's a delicacy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
a delicacy.
Now I'm hungry. We got to end this.
All right. Let's go get some food. All right. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. We'd like to thank our guest this week, Yale head men's lacrosse coach, Andy Shea. Good luck to you and the Bulldogs in your opener this week and throughout the season. Hey, if you're interested in advertising on this podcast or any of our others at Inside Lacrosse, send me a direct message or an email. It's super affordable. You reach a wide swath of college lacrosse fans every week. Dixon and I love to hear from you, so give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm at simply D_FLY. That's at D_fly. Remember, stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games.